Mitzora. Mitzora is my bar mitzvah parsha, so I'm very excited.
You
going to
sing for us?
I learned the parsha. You know, in those days it was not so common. It's not like in Israel where all the kids know how to do it. But, you know, I was an exceptionally annoying child, so my father tried to teach me how to learn, but it was hopeless, so he had to hire somebody. You know, which then later on I found that is the correct thing to do educationally. You know. But I don't think he felt that way. This year is sponsored by Eddie and Batya Jacobs in celebration of the birth of a granddaughter, Roni Bat Zion, born to Yosef and Lisa. Eddie was a student in the yeshiva and has gone on to achieve a certain amount of fame in synagogue designs, interiors. He's a very sought out person. And Batya works in that school, right? What's that school? Some school. She's also a well-known teacher. Anyway, I want to remind you. The parasha of Shmini, doesn't just tell you that you should eat meat from kosher animals or kosher birds, but it actually lists names of animals that are edible and birds that are edible, and that's, you know, if you're a Baal Koreh, that's a little bit annoying. You have to learn these words that don't have any particular meaning to us today. Then, afterwards, in the Parshiyot of Tazria Mitzora, a lot of time is spent on describing what Tzorat is. Tzorat is often explained as some kind of leprosy, like some kind of a disease of the skin, apparently very serious. But the Torah says you could have tzorat in your clothing, you could have tzorat in your beged, in your body, and you could have tzorat in your house. Very strange that your house can also become filled with tzorat. And it's the Kohen who has to decide whether the infection of tzorat is going to get worse, in which case drastic measures have to be taken, or you can declare that the tzorat has kind of abetted and it'll be all right. So this is described at great length in the Torah. And the question that I would like to try to deal with is, why was what was the importance of the Torah? I mean, you know, in Shabbat, even though there are many psukim in the Torah that talk about Shabbat, there's very little particular information about how to keep Shabbat in the Torah. Right? We know that there's the Lavetet Melachot, which are derived, these are things that you're forbidden from doing on Shabbat, and that's derived from Melechet HaMishkan, but the actual Melachot are not mentioned in the Torah. The only thing that's mentioned in the Torah about Shabbat, which affects every one of us, every single week of the year, right, is Lo Tevaru Eish, Bekol Moshvotechem Yom Shabbat. There's a prohibition against building a fire, making a fire on Shabbat. Of all the prohibitions, of all the prohibitions that are connected to Shabbat, all you have to do is look at a recently published compendium on Hilchot Shabbat, which are usually very dense and have a lot of information in them. If you just look at that book, you say, you wonder, how is it, like, what's the measure of it that Tzorat is so carefully described and in the Torah? And Shabbat, for example, is not. Shabbat is not. Yom HaKippurim is not. I mean, the Avodah, the Beit HaMikdash, yes, but not the Melachot that are Tzorot, right? Yom HaKippurim is like Shabbat with a little plus, like even more than Shabbat, because on Shabbat, it's forbidden to fast. But on Yom HaKippurim, we do fast, even if it's on Shabbat. So there's a pasuk in the previous parasha There's a pasuk in the previous parasha. No, let's start from. Let's not do it that way. Let's start from our parasha, right? Vayikra Perek Yud Bet. You see, Vayikra Perek Yud Bet. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe leMor. It's at the bottom of the page. The bottom one. Bottom of the page. Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe leMor. Daber el Bnei Yisrael leMor. Isha ki tazriya. The Yaldah Zachar Tazriya somehow comes from the Hebrew word for Zera, for seed. If she becomes pregnant, I guess it means the Yaldah Zachar, and she has a male child. Okay, there's some kind of regulation about a woman who gives birth to a baby. If it's a male baby, there's one set of rules, and a female baby, there's another set of rules. Okay, this is the introduction, the first pasuk, which introduces the laws of a birthing woman. Now look at Rashi. Rashi says, Omar Rav Simlai, there was Rashi. Rashi looks at the situation, and he's going to quote something from Chazal, which he feels is going to clarify something. But what is Rashi saying? Omar Rav Simlai, Kishem shi yitzirato shel adam achar kol behema chayav ha'ol b'maseh bereishit. Just as when God created the world, right? When God created the world, so first animals, and only Friday afternoon did God create man, right? Yitzirato shel Adam. Man, I guess he means, Rashi means, or Rav Simlai understands, it's man and women. Jesus kol beima chayav ba'ov, achar kol beima chayav ba'ov ba'aseh bereishit, tach torato nitparsha, so too did the laws of Adam, torato shel Adam, nitparsha achrei torat beima chayav ba'ov. So Rashi quotes Rabbi Simlai, because the question that Rabbi Simlai is dealing with seems to Rashi to be of great concern. And what is the question? What's the question Rabbi Simlai is dealing with? He doesn't understand why the parasha of Shemini, which is the parasha of animals and birds, which are kosher and which are treif, which is tamei and which is tahor, why that parasha comes before the parasha about people. When is a person tamei? When is a woman tamei? When is the tzarat make you tamei? Shouldn't that come before Shemini? That's what Rabbi Simlai is dealing with. And so Rabbi Simlai answers that question. And he says, just as, so too. Right? That's his answer. Just as in Maaseh Bereishit, the creation of the animals preceded the creation of man. Right? And I could say, why? Why did the creation of animals precede the creation of man? So you could say, well, after all, man was supposed to come into a kind of finished world, a world in which he could live. And somehow the animals were there to service man. I'm not sure exactly how, because in Gan Eden, we were not carnivores exactly. We couldn't slaughter animals to eat meat. We could, according to Tosfot in Sanhedrin, Tosfot says you could. We were allowed in Gan Eden. I mean, we weren't there. But if we were there, we would be allowed to eat carrion. Right? You could, like, if an animal killed an animal and had enough of it, then we could come along and get a steak out of it. But we couldn't kill animals for food. And yet, most people would say that the animals are created first so that when man came into the world on the sixth day, he would come into a finished world, a world in which he could live. Not, he wouldn't have to wait another day to be able to eat. So that's why it is that Adam comes after Behemoth in Maaseh Bereshit. So Rabbi Simlai, who had this insight, he said, "Kishem shitziyato shel adam achar kol behema chaya ba'ot maaseh bereshit, kach torato nitparsha achrei torat behema chaya ba'ot." In other words, there's of course no actual connection unless we could create one. I mean, so he says, just like that, so too here. In other words, what Rabbi Simlai is saying is that the Torah of Adam, the Torah when it relates to Adam, somehow harkens back to the creation of the world itself. And that the creation of the world determined how Torah HaAdam should be presented to us. Now that is the subject of our learning today. We have to try to understand what it was that Rabbi Simlai was talking about. I mean, it's true, what he says is true, that in the Maaseh Bereshit, the animals came before man. But why should that determine in the book of Vayikra whether you talked about kosher, unkosher animals before or after you talked about Tomei and Tohor as relating to man? Okay, now let's look at the first source. We go back to a pasuk that we already learned about. Remember the pasuk in Shmini. This was the, according to Rashi, the prize that Aaron got for Vayidom Aaron. He accepted the fate that was dealt his children, and not, he didn't say anything. And his reward was that the prohibition of Yayin v'sheichar for Kohanim was given to him, right? He's the one who passed it on. It's the only Torah that was not given first to Moshe Rabbeinu and then to Bnei Yisrael. This was given first to Aaron. That's what Rashi says. Okay, Al teish atal vanecha itach bevoachem el ol moed velo tamutu chagat olam ledorot achem. So you know the Gemara, of course, discusses what the precise definitions are here. How much wine during the day, during the night, before you do the avoda, if you might be called for the avoda. All of these possibilities are discussed in the Gemara in Ta'anit on this particular question. But what we're interested in, I think, is the next pasuk. And the next pasuk says, "La'avdil bein hakodesh uvein hachol uvein hatameh uvein hatahor." La'avdil. What is la'avdil? What is la'avdil? To distinguish. To distinguish what exactly is the Torah talking about. The Torah very often tells us to do something or to avoid doing something, but doesn't say la'avdil. What's the la'avdil bein hakodesh uvein hachol? So Rashi says, Rashi translates. Let's look at the, just want to look at the Rashi in Pasuk Yud, la'avdil. Kidei shetavdilu bein avodah kedosha limechulelet. Avodah kedosha is avodah, service in the temple that is acceptable, that is proper. And mechulelet is like the word chol, right? Non-sacred. So avodah mechulelet is what the Gemara calls pasul. It just doesn't work. It has to be done over again, right? You can't do that. So Rashi says, look at it, Rashi. Kidei shetavdilu, you should distinguish between avodah kedosha lemechulelet. What do you mean that you should distinguish? I mean, the Torah tells you, if you drink wine or whiskey or whatever sheikhar is, if you drink, then it's no good. And if you don't drink, it is good. So what is it exactly that you have to be mavdil? What do you have to be mavdil? Rashi, kidei shetavdilu bein avodah kedosha lemechulelet. Kidei shetavdilu. In other words, as I said, the Gemara says, how much wine? What hour of the day? Are you definitely going to do the avodah in that day, on the next day? Are you going to be called? So lahavdil is not about it itself. Don't drink wine, do drink wine. But lahavdil is, we could call it further study. Right? All of these ideas demand precision. Precision is the one thing, which in the generation, I mean, whatever you could say the Torah is the Torah and nothing ever changes, everything's always the same, and always, we always do, I mean, accept it, accept all of that. But one thing you have to admit, that precision changes. So that as you find out that on the night of Pesach, you have to drink a cup of wine. Right, and the cup of wine has to be a certain size. And then lo and behold, you find out that that certain size has evolved over the generations. Now, it's evolved for two reasons. One is because greater precision, however it's measured. And the other is greater precision also produces greater nervousness. In other words, you're no longer so certain that the way your grandfather did it is the way you should do it. Suddenly you think, well, you know, maybe we have a further obligation. So that's called, that according to Rashi, is called lahavdil. Lahavdil. When, where, how, precision. Precision, all of that has to do with, I'll listen in a second, okay, just 1 second. Precision is a movable feast, right? It changes all the time. I remember when I was in college 50 years ago. No. Scratch that. It's not even close. When I was in college, I studied chemistry for a while because, as all Jewish boys thought at the time, I was going to be a doctor. So you're supposed to take chemistry if you're going to be a doctor. So I took this course called qualitative analysis. So the interesting thing, I mean, I wasn't that interested, but the interesting thing was that everybody got a scale. I never saw anything like it. Like, you know, the measurements were, I mean, today, of course, they digitalize it and they do it with lasers and that. There's no comparison. But in my day, that was very remarkable. So I understood that when they say kezayit, it became suddenly a term that was fraught with doubt. Would you ever be able to figure it out? Would you ever be able to figure out what a kezayit is? I mean, it's inconceivable. Yes, I'm sorry.
No, I thought maybe it's the context. The instead of conditions or precision, it's the context in which you make the distinctions.
What do you mean?
The meaning of any concept.
Yeah.
It's, for example, most human beings are rational, right?
I haven't met most of them.
Whatever rational means.
Yeah, well, so if we don't know what it means, so we can say yes.
No, but when you use the term rationality in game theory, it means one thing. If you mean it for human being, human being cannot be completely rational.
But so everybody...
Because there is a robot.
I'm not talking about rational, I'm talking about measurements. Okay, it doesn't matter. Thank you. It says lahavdil, the pasuk says lahavdil ben hakodesh ben hachol. And I say that this word implies that there's a lot of work left to do. It's not just what it says in the Torah, but measurements and details. What we call Torah Shebaal Peh is all implied in this word lahavdil, to distinguish. You have to distinguish things one from the other. Now, look at the next source. The next source is, again, the last psukim of Parashat Shmini. The last psukim of Parashat Shmini. It says, Al tishaktsu et nafshoteichem b'kol ha-sheretz ha-shoreitz. Tishaktsu, the sheretz, right? Don't make yourself filthy in some way with these little crawling things that are draped. You know, there are little crawling things that are kosher, but most of them are not. So, why stay away? Because sheretz ha-shoreitz, v'lo titamu b'hem v'nitmeitem b'hem. and you should not become tamei. The word tamei is also a word that deserves damei tahor. That distinction deserves consideration because it means somehow not being clean and not being good, not being right. But we're not interested. We're in the word lahavdil, right? V'lo titamu b'hem v'nit meitim b'hem. Rashi says, "Al tik shaktzu b'achilatan." Sherei ketiv nafsho teichem v'shikutz nefesh b'maga. He says the pasuk is not talking about touching them, but it's talking about eating them. V'chein v'lo titamu b'achilatan. Okay, so Rashi tells us, gives us some important information about this pasuk. Pasuk mem dalit. Ki ani Hashem, this is one of the most difficult psukim in the Torah. Ki ani Hashem Elokeichem v'itkadishtem v'itkadishtem. Somehow, that's the word kadosh, right? Hitpael form, which means something or other. We know that hitpael is often reflexive, like hitlabashti, I dressed myself, right? Hitkad. The hitkadishtem, you shall make yourself kadosh by following these rules. V'yitem kadoshim, and you will be declared kadosh. Ki kadosh ani, that's the difficult part. That somehow we're asked to compare the kedusha that we have by not eating worms and crickets or something. Crickets are kosher. Something is kosher. Don't the Yemenites eat that stuff?
Locusts.
Oh, locusts they eat?
Some.
They make it like into a, like a frying pan. Yeah, it's good.
Yes, my wife, she cooks.
Cooks locusts? How do you get just a couple of locusts? They're like, you either can take a million or none.
Soften.
Kikadosh ani, v'lo titamu et nafshoteichem v'kol asheretz aromeis al haaretz. Okay, I mean, I understand the general idea, but the reference to kedusha is not so clear to me. Rashi says, k'shem shani kadosh, shani Hashem Elokeichem, kach migashtem kitshu atvichem lemata. Okay. I don't know. You know, Rashi thought he was helpful. He's not helpful to me. I don't understand what that means to say. What it means to say that just as I am, so you too, if you're talking about a Kodesh Baruch Hu, I mean, if you're talking about an action, like something you have to do, I can understand. Do what God says and then you'll be a servant of God. But do what God says and you'll be Kadosh? That I don't understand. Now look at the next Pasuk, which is the Pasuk that interests me in particular. Ki ani Hashem, ki is a connecting word, right? Which kind of explains what came before, even though we don't understand necessarily what is going to be explained. Hamale etchem me'eretz Mitzrayim. Ani Hashem Elokeichem, who brings you up out of the land of Mitzrayim. Liot lechem le'elokim, v'yitem kedoshim, and so you will be kadosh. That's why you were taken out of Mitzrayim. Ki kadosh ani. Ki kadosh ani. Okay, Rashi. Ki ani Hashem ha-male etchem. You see that, Rashi? I am God who brought you up out of Mitzrayim. Hashem says, al menat, in order that, tikashet tikablu mitzvotai, eleiti etchem. I brought you up out of Mitzrayim, in order that you should accept the mitzvot. And by accepting the mitzvot, you will be granted the status of kadosh. Kain? Davar acher. This davar acher is textually problematic and appears in a lot of the older editions of Rashi in parentheses. But it doesn't matter. As far as we're concerned, it's like regular Rashi. We just not perfectly sure. I mean, you know, Rashi lived long before printing, and printing is what kind of standardized the text of the holy books. Before printing, there was copying, and copying doesn't always work perfectly. And even in the time of Rashi, and the Gemara, Rashi very often corrects the standard Nusach in the Gemara, which then again was corrected by printers. The Gemara was corrected by the printers according to Rashi. So you have the odd situation where you read the Gemara and then Rashi says, this is the way you should read the Gemara, and you look at the Gemara and that's exactly the way we read it. In other words, the printers corrected the Gemara according to the correction of Rashi. So you have this kind of anomalous situation in the text of the Gemara. So we don't care about that. It's there, but we don't care about it. Davar acher. When Rashi says davar acher, you should always be nervous. Right? Because, you know, why two commentaries? Why two comments? Why not one comment? What's the davar acher? Is it better than the first? Is it not as good as the first? Why did Rashi put it in? But we have to learn it first. Ki ani Hashem hama'aleh etchem. Right, davar acher, about that part of the pasuk, it says hama'aleh etchem, who brought you up out of Mitzrayim. Bicholam k'tivot seiti. So Rashi says that if you look, I mean, in the unedited Rashi, it says Rabbi Yishmael said this. But okay, so it's missing here. This must be the Bar Ilan. Bicholam k'tivot seiti. Every time HaKadosh Baruch Hu mentions himself, so to speak, in relation to Yitziat Mitzrayim, he always says, "Asher hotzeiti etchem mi'eretz Mitzrayim." You know, hotzeiti is mu'uzan, mu'unach. You know, horizontal. Hotzeiti is from Egypt to Har Sinai. Always says hotzeiti etchem. Here is the only place. The only place, the Kan Ketiv HaMa'aleh. No, it is Rabbi Yishmael. Kan Ketiv HaMa'aleh. God brought you up. So it's a question. God didn't bring us up. God brought us out. Right from Mitzrayim to Har Sinai. God did not bring us up out of Mitzrayim into the clouds. Why is it that in this place and this place alone, the Torah says, "Hama'aleh etchem mi'eretz Mitzrayim." Tana devei Rabbi Yishmael. So Tana devei Rabbi Yishmael is the Rabbi Yishmael who is the antagonist of Rabbi Akiva. Right? Rabbi Akiva was very detailed in his drashot on the Torah. He was willing to darshan even prepositions. You know, prepositions in Hebrew don't necessarily mean anything. But Rabbi Akiva was willing to darshan prepositions, and Rabbi Yishmael generally was not. But here, Rabbi Yishmael comes up with a drasha. El Malay, Tanadvei Rabbi Yishmael, Malay lo aleiti et Yisrael b'Mitzrayim, Ela b'shvil she'ei mitamim b'shratzim k'shar umot dayam. Remember Dayenu? On Pesach, everybody loves Dayenu because it has a tune and it signifies that you're about to eat. Those are two good reasons. People wonder what all that stuff before Dayenu is for, you know. But this is what he says. He, Rabbi Yishmael, says, "Ilu imalei lo eleiti et Yisrael b'Mitzrayim b'shvil she'ei mitamim b'shratzim k'shar umot dayam." He says, "Eleiti etchem" doesn't mean the nation of Israel was physically exalted, but they were spiritually enlivened by Yitziat Mitzrayim. And why does that pasuk appear here? He says, because the nature of Torah is that even if they only had received this prohibition, she'ein mitamim b'shratzim k'shar olmot, that they should not eat the creepy little things that other people eat, they would have already felt and the exalted nature of their relationship to God. So even though it seems strange to us that anybody would say, like in Dayenu, "Ilu kervanu lifnei har Sinai velo natan lanu et haTorah," if that's not a showstopper, then I don't know what is a showstopper. I mean, the whole point was to go to Har Sinai. How can somebody say a thing like that? I mean, the author of that piyut. But there it is. Eilu kevadu tehar Sinai, v'lo natan lanu et haTorah. So what did Rabbi Yishmael say? Rabbi Yishmael says, look, if you cut down the process of Bnei Yisrael leaving Mitzrayim step by step by step, so you know that along the way, they were given directives and they were offered information and they were reconstituted. It wasn't just the slave one day became the receiver of the Torah the next. He was processed. And so we understood that the Torah was not just a take it or leave it kind of a setup, but Torah was every step of the way as something exalted. And then the last pasuk, if you look at the last pasuk of his group, it says, "Labdil again, ben atameh, ben atahor, ben achaya, ne'echelet, doy lechaya, shelo te'achel, lahavdil." So what is lahavdil? The way we explain lahavdil means to look into it, to investigate it. Which shratzim? How much can you eat? What can you eat? What can you not eat? In other words, this is all about lahavdil. So we have lahavdil by Yayin v'Sheichar, and we have again the Havdil here by Tamei v'Tahor, right? And if you look at the text of the Nitziv, the Hamek Davar, that is printed right here, we'll read a couple of lines. L'Havdil ben Tamei ben Tahor. Remember that pasuk Mem Zayin, right? L'Havdil ben Tamei ben Tahor. The pasuk we just read. What does the Nitziv say? The Nitziv says, "Who mitzvata say?" What's a mitzvah to say? The mitzvah to say is before. Don't eat this. Eat that. That's a mitzvah to say. What do you mean, lahavdil is a mitzvah to say? What's the mitzvah to say? Lahavdil. U mitzvah to say, lachkor, velivdok, kol shu safek. That we know that there are animals that are not listed in the list. And there are animals that don't obviously fit into the regulation, you know, split hoof and chew your cud, and there are all kinds of strange animals in the world we have discovered, and all kinds of strange shratzim in the world. So he says, "Livdok kol shu safek im tameo tahor al pi simanim." So he says, "Lahavdil means for further study." Lahavdil, according to the Nitziv, means, look, just because you got the list of the Torah doesn't mean that you know everything, that you could answer all the questions. You may have heard there are people who didn't want to eat hodu. What do you call that? Turkey. They wanted to eat turkey, because turkey's not in the list, and they didn't have turkeys in Europe. They never saw a turkey. So Rabbanim came to America, and they saw these turkeys running around, and hey, they never saw it before. They never saw such a thing in their lives. So they said, no, you can't eat turkeys. Turkeys, of course, were saved in America by Thanksgiving, because somebody paskin that you have to eat a turkey on Thanksgiving. So they became kosher. Ken?
No, just an idea occurred to me about Havdalah that we make. Havdalah we call all the Chavashah ben Yisrael or Amin.
Yeah.
Right? Now, we can see this is an obvious difference. When you saw it, I mean, behavior. In Kodesh Lachol, you have to have more discernment. It really.
I like that. But I may steal it from you a little bit later. Okay? I like it.
You should good. Write a book on
that. Okay. She'eini karlan, the second line. The Gemara asked the question. A guy was going along in the desert. That going along in the desert means he has no one to ask. There's no one that he can talk. He's hungry. Right? He found some animal, and the hooves are like, they look like they cut. Doesn't look like they originally were split. So you have to look into it. That's the whole point of lahavdil. That's when the tzeef says lahavdil means for further study. That's part of the deal. That's part of the deal of Talmud Torah. Talmud Torah is not the Shulchan Aruch. It's not do this, don't do that. But it's Here's the general position. You have to figure out how it applies to particular cases all the time. The same thing is true about Yayin v'Sheichar, and the same thing is now true about Shratzim and Kashrut. Afilu, now he says a technical thing, Afilu Data Rambam. It's well known that the Rambam had this position, the Safek min HaTorah, Mutar min HaTorah. If you have a Torah prohibition, and you don't know if the thing you're looking at fits into that Torah prohibition, it's a Safek. A Safek means that you'll never be able to know. You can't clarify it. If you can clarify it, it's not a Safek. It's just that you don't, you know, you're just too stupid to know the answer. So you have to ask somebody else. But a safek means no hope. There's no hope of ever clarifying it. So the Rambam said that when the Torah said something, it's asur, it meant vadai asur. If it's not vadai asur, it's mutar. Or it would be mutar, midrabona would be asur. But that was the position of the Rambam. That's how the Sheikh Shmaitzer starts his famous book. Right, there's the Rambam and the Rashba. The Rashba says Sofek Midoraisa is Asur Midoraisa, and the Rambam says Sofek Midoraisa is Muta Midoraisa. So he says, even according to the Rambam, right? He says, even according to the Rambam, who said Safek is Mutar. But that's only if you've run out of any possibility of clarifying it. If you haven't, just because it was like declared a safek doesn't mean anything. You have to do it, right? Uktiv ben tamei ben tahor velo ktiv ben tamei litahor, etc. So this is what he says. This is what the Netziv says. Okay, now let's turn the page. Just want to remind you of some sukim. Some sukim in Breishit. Breishit bara Elokim et ha-shamayim v'et ha-aretz. Remember that pasuk? There's the word et. The word et, which doesn't have any obvious meaning. Right? The grammarians call it a direct object marker. In other words, the word et is always followed by a direct object. But you could leave out the word et. It means the same thing. You don't need an et to determine that something is a direct object. You could say, in Hebrew, it would be the same if you said, Breishit bar Elokim, Shamayim v'aretz. Wouldn't be any difference in its meaning or in its correctness. Both are equally correct. V'aretz hayta tohu v'avohu. Okay, tohu v'avohu. What does tohu v'avohu mean?
Desolate.
What does it mean?
Desolate.
I don't know. It's very hard to translate things. You don't understand the word in Hebrew. You don't understand the word in English. What does desolate mean? It's like a building or a desert.
Who cares?
What? I don't know. Rashi says Tohu l'shon taf mem hei tama v'shimamon shadam tohe. Rashi's entry, he wants to tell you what tohu v'avohu means, but he also wants to tell you why you have to have two words to express one idea. I don't know what the one. I think that one of the one idea we will see in a minute, but I don't get it so much from Rashi. Bohu l'shon rekut v'tzadu. Rekut maybe is what you said, desolate, empty. Empty, I don't know if you mean it was once filled with something and now it's empty, or it's just empty. I don't see it that way. I'll tell you what I think it means in a minute. So the pasuk said Ruach Elokim merachevet al pnei hamayim. So it sounds like the world is covered by water. Ruach Elokim, the spirit of God, is hovering over the water, which is covering the earth. So Ruach Elokim Rachefet, Rashi says, Kisei HaKavod Omeid Ba'avir Umrachef Al Pnei HaMayim Ruach Piv Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Uvimamaro. I know you never saw this Rashi in your lives, right? Because it's hard to get through the first pasuk to get to the second pasuk, you know. So look at what Rashi says. If you saw the Rashi, you would never forget it. You wouldn't understand it, but you'd never forget it. What do you mean to say Ruach Limarachefet? Hovers. Hovers. You can't be everywhere and also hover. Hover means you are somewhere. Meaning that you don't want to say that. You don't want to say that God is not everywhere.
It just means moving.
I always thought
it just means moving.
Yes, but let's say you could see it. You would see something moving, right?
Waves,
no, but it would have to have limits. Otherwise, you wouldn't see anything.
You see the ocean doesn't have limits.
It doesn't?
Well, not when you look at it.
That's part of what it says here in the...
Did you say God was hovering over everything? I mean,
you could say whatever you want, but I want to see what Rashi says. Look at Rashi. Rashi says, Rashi apparently had trouble with this. So Rashi quotes Chazal, who say, Kisei HaKavod. What's Kisei HaKavod? Something that has a limit, right? A Kisei, in order to say it's a Kisei, it has to look like a Kisei. In order for it to look like a Kisei, it has to be limited. Right, Kisei HaKavod. There's such a thing as Kisei HaKavod. Omeid ba'avir, stands in the air. Umerachev al bnei ha'mayin, hovers over the water. Beruach piv shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'ma'amaro, and the wind that comes out of the mouth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and his words. Ki yonah ha'merachevet al haken, like a dove hovering over his yes. So I want to understand what problem is Rashi dealing with? The problem of merachefet, because merachefet implies a limit, and you don't want to say that God has a limit. So what did Rashi do? He substituted for God, he substituted Kisei HaKavod. Kisei HaKavod, oh, there's a concept that exists someplace that there's a Kisei HaKavod. Kisei HaKavod, you can look at, you can see, you can touch, you can see it hovering and over the world.
What's the shoresh of Merachefet?
Merachefet? Reish Chet Pei.
Yeah, what does it mean?
I don't know. We all think it means to hover. I don't know.
Yeah, that's the translation.
I don't know too much about what words mean. It's very hard for me.
You're like this Einfall.
What?
An Einfall. You know what an Einfall is?
Wow.
Yeah.
What an Einfall.
Einfall.
But it appears again in Devarim, only one other place in the Tanakh, Merachefet. Merachefet appears only one other place in the Tanakh, in Devarim, where it says an eagle hovers over its nest. That's why Rashi pulls down this example.
Yes, okay. But the point is that you could say something about God's presence even before the creation. I mean, that's what this pasuk is saying, that that just like after creation, we can determine that there's a Mishkan and that there's a Beit HaMikdash, and that it, even though it runs contrary to our assumption about God's presence, which is universal always, it's always there. Nevertheless, we can talk about it just as the Torah tells us that is the case before creation. Before creation. Even though, you know, I'm with you. Even though you know that we determined someplace along the line that creation was Yesh Me'ayin. Right? Something from nothing. Ex nihilo. Something from nothing. So that means before creation, what was there before creation?
Nothing.
Nothing. Very good. Nothing. And therefore, if you look, you can find in Chassidut, including Rav Nachman, talks about the fact that God had no limits. And that's what nothing means. Something is always limited. In order to say, it's a table, you would say, well, here's a table, here's no table. Right? That's called a limit. But before there were limits, before there was creation, there was nothing. And nothing is limitless. There's no way to. So here,
huh?
Halal panui. It's panui. What were you? Are you asking or telling? No, if you're asking, I'll try to figure out what the question is. But if you're telling, thank you very much. Just a minute, doctor. Just a minute. I got to read two more psukim. Can I read two more psukim?
No.
I know you want to leave, right?
No, I don't want to take up another minute of your time. After the shiur is over, I would like the opportunity to tell you what the Einfach.
Okay, fine. But I'm always interested in Einfach. So here, Pasuk Dalet. Look at Pasuk Dalet. Vayar Elokim et ha'or ki tov vayavdel Elokim bein ha'or v'bein ha'choshek. You see that? Vayar Elokim et ha'or v'bein ha'choshek vayavdel. Now that word vayavdel in Bereshit is an important word in my opinion, because we all know that the Kabbalah, that the Arizal said that creation is done with four words: Aleph, Bet, Yud, Ayin. I'm sorry for mentioning Kabbalah. I know you probably don't like that. But Kabbalah, Aleph, Bet, Yud, Ayin. What are the words? Aleph is Amar. Vayomer Elokim Yehi Or. Right? Bet is Bara. Breshit Bara Elokim. Yud is Yatsar. Vayitzer Hashem Elokim Et Adam. And Abiyah. And Ayin. What's Ayin?
Mashiach.
Huh?
Asa.
Yafet. Asa. So those are the words that are generally used to express Briah, Yesh B'Yesh, but something new. But there's another kind of creation. There's the creation of Vayavdel, which does not create something new, but establishes boundaries. It says, here is the water, and here is the dry land. Now before Kodesh Baruch Hu divided up the world between water and dry land, it was all there. Right? There was water that covered up everything. So Vayavdel in this case means that God distinguished. That God distinguished. Pasuk Vav, Vayom Elokim Yirekiyah B'toch HaMayim V'Mavdil V'Mayim L'Mayim. Mavdil, right? Mavdil means to distinguish the above from the below. It was blue above and blue below, but it was not the same. Pasuk Zayin. This is just a list of psukim. Vayas Elokim et Rakia. Vayavdel bein ha'mayim v'bechad v'bein v'asham mi'al ha'rakia. Vayichein. Pasuk Yudalet. Vayom Elokim yihi ma'orot v'rakia ha'shamayim l'havdil bein ha'yom v'bein ha'layla. L'havdil bein ha'yom v'alayla. So it means that, what does it mean? That a person, that there's something that we're going to be involved with. We're going to have to find out when is Yom and when is Laila. As you know, I mean, today it seems like an easy thing. You take the calendar that somebody sent you in the mail, and it tells you when candle lighting is and when Shabbos goes out. But this is the result of a tremendous enterprise, not of the guy who made the calendar, but a tremendous enterprise during the years, where, you know, over years, where we tried to figure out when Shabbat, when Zricha is, and when Shki'ah is, which we now do for every day of the year, for every place in the world, for every city in every place in the world, and soon it'll come in every neighborhood, in every city in the world. And even though the distinctions are small, they make us feel good about it, because we're doing the right thing, right? We're trying to be precise, which is what we mentioned earlier. Now, etc. Pasuk Yud Chet, the last pasuk that I mentioned, all in Perek Aleph. V'limshol b'yom v'alayla l'avdil bein ha'or v'bein ha'choshech, l'avdil bein ha'or v'bein ha'choshech. So there's a l'avdil in the creation, which is different than Aleph Bet Yud Ayin. Aleph Bet Yud Ayin is something from something, according to the Ramban. The Ramban said that the creation of Yesh V'Ayin took place at one moment. Something was created. And all the other creations are something from something. That something, that Yesh, that was created was then the basis for the creation of everything else. This is the Ramban explains at the beginning of his commentary to the Perek Aleph of Bereshit. Lahavdil is something else. It's there. It's just not properly organized. And we see that the word Lahavdil imposes itself upon us in history. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, here's the land, here's the water, but we have to figure out what do we do with the tides. We have to figure about ownership, about agriculture. Right? We can't leave it as it is. Right? You see that some places they made ducts that brought the water, and some places they had pipes and something. You know, everything that is lahavdil created problems in the Torah. Finally, let's look at the Hamek Davar on this Pasuk Dalet. He says clearly, Hora'at Hevdel Hu Bishnei Mashma'ot. The word Lahavdil has two meanings in Hebrew. That's what he's talking about, is Hebrew. Aleph, Masach Mavdil Ben Shnei Dvarim Shavim. O'inam Shavim. A curtain that divides two areas, two things, two times, like a mechitza. A mechitza is lahavdil between one side and the other side, right? There's the men's side of the mechitza, woman's side of the mechitza. That's what a mechitza is. He says, "Ben shnei dvarim shenirin lachusha ayin shem shavim." Even though, I'm sorry, I skipped a few words. Bet, the second meaning is hevdel ruchani. Bein shnei dvarim, a spiritual distinction between two different things. And they're in the chusha ayin, shem shavim. It would seem that they are actually similar. What is he talking about? He's talking about shratzim as opposed that you can eat as opposed to those you can't eat. Animals you could eat as opposed that you, to those you can't eat. A person who's tameh as opposed to a person who's tahor. All of these things, right? Dvarim shenirim the chusha ayin shem shavim. There's no difference to us before the Torah. No difference if it's a camel or if it's a cow. I mean, what difference does it make to us? I mean, you should be able to eat either. Shehem shavim kemo havdalah ben yom kadosh lechol. For example, havdalah, which is what was, somebody said it. Havdalah, you say havdalah. Doctor, you said it. Havdalah means to distinguish between Kodesh and Chol. That's what we do. We say, up to now it's Friday, and all of a sudden it becomes Shabbos. Right? We have Kemo Avdala Ben Yom Kodesh Lechol. Delefia Ne'eh Ma Yom Meyomayim. He says, after all, ask any non-Jew, is there any difference in Friday and Saturday? No difference. They're both days of the week. V'chein Avdel Ben Tahor L'Tamei V'od Harbei. So that he says that there is an interpreter. The rest of the sieve, I'm not sure I agree with, so I'm not going to quote it. So what he says is that the notion of Havdalah is in fact also something spiritual. It means something that I can't identify easily. Something that goes beyond science, right? All science is based on, starts out from this idea that you can make distinctions, like the chemical elements, right? Somebody had to find them before you could take a step further, or elementary laws of thermodynamics, right? It all comes from observation. From looking, it's the talent that we have. So if I go back to the beginning of our She'ur, and we look at the Pasuk of Vayikra, very good base, Daber B'nei Yisrael Moishaki Tazria. Remember that Pasuk? That's our parasha. That's the Pasuk in our parasha. So Rashi quotes Rabbi Simlai, כשם שיצירתו של אדם אחר כל בהמה חיה ועוב מעשה בראשית, כך תורתו נתפרשה אחר תורת בהמה חיה ועוב. So Rashi says, there's a question, shouldn't the Torah talk about man / woman before the Torah talks about animals and fish and creepy little things? Shouldn't it do that? They says, no. What the Torah is telling us is that we are granted a special insight, and that insight is named Lahavdil. We can distinguish Tamei for the Torah. Of course, we're directed by the Torah, but we have this ability to know that there could be distinctions beyond our capacity to know them. It is not everything is judged. Not everything is judged because, like if you study anything, any subject you study, so you say, well, 400 years ago they said this, but today we say this. We understand that there's always progress, there's always change, and therefore there's no reason to think that there are things that we don't understand, that we might understand someday, and the Torah gives us a shortcut to understanding. So the Torah said, for some reason, eat a cow. Don't eat a camel. Is that correct? Not supposed to eat a camel, right? Don't eat a camel. So he said, I don't know why. I don't know, but it makes sense to me that there could be a reason. There could be, I mean, all the attempts up to now to figure it out have been futile. But I imagine that there might be a reason. There might be a reason that will become clear to me. Because this lahavdil is, after all, a process. There are things I understand today that I didn't understand 400 years ago. So why shouldn't I be able to think, to imagine that I will be able to understand this as well? Just as the Torah said, Yayin v'sheichar, etc. I was able to understand when the Kohanim can do it and when they can't do it and what they should do and give limits and make it part of the Shulchan Aruch. I mean, I was able to do that. The same thing is true about creeping animals. The same is true about doubtful animals. I was able to solve that problem. So I may be someday able to solve the bigger problems as well. And certainly I learn all of this from the creation of the world, that Lahavdil, even though it's not one of the four words that the Kabbalists liked so much, but Lahavdil is part of the process that with which God created the world. And therefore, if I say to myself, and so why? So why does the Torah tell us that? The Torah tells us because creation becomes a model, right? Why does the Torah tell us about creation b'chlal? That's Rashi's question. Why does the Torah just tell us, hear the mitzvahs, you know, go do mitzvahs, do the right thing, don't mess around. What do you have to sit around and study about the creation of the world, which is certainly a difficult subject and a more difficult for us to understand? Because the creation of the world gives us certain guidelines about how we should live our lives. So what did Rabbi Simlai say? What did Rabbi Simlai say? You know why the Torah of man / woman comes after the Torah of animals? To remind us that intellectually and spiritually, we're connected to the creation. We are the result of the creation. While we may not understand everything that had to do with creation, but we move in that direction all the time. We understand things better and better. So that's Tazria Mitzorah.
I'm still missing why the man is last, though. Why people are last.
Because that's how the creation was.
But I thought that they were going to tell us, I thought this was to explain.
To remind us that Tamei and Tahor and Mitzorah and not Mitzorah are somehow part of this Lahavdil that really makes, it's not just a Boy Scout manual. It's not just, if you do this, then God will reward you.
I don't understand why that has to be, why that can't come before the animals.
I guess it could. But Rabbi Simlai, I don't know if it couldn't, but Rabbi Simlai thought it was going to remind us of what was going on in creation. That this is all a matter of Lahavdil. And Lahavdil is part of the way that God created the world. Okay.